This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The 85th state legislature came to a contentious conclusion on May 29th. As a result, last week, Governor Greg Abbott called a special session, telling lawmakers to come up to Austin and get back to work, wrap up some unfinished business. Abbott's 20 action items include the privacy, better known as the bathroom bill, property tax reform, school choice, and finance, and also several local versus state-controlled issues and an anti-abortion issue. Lawmakers will convene once again on July 18th. They have 30 days to pass this additional legislation. The top priority for the special session will be sunset review legislation, which must pass to keep the lights on at crucial state agencies like the Texas Medical Board. So what can we learned from this last legislative session? Did you see bills that passed that you celebrate or bills that died that you just wonder what happened? Give us a call. What do you think about the legislative session and the special session? The number call is 210-614-8980, and you can email us at thesource at tpr.org, 210-614-8980. With me to help figure this all out is Harvey Kronberg, founder and the editor of the Quorum Report, Ross Ramsey, the executive editor of the Texas Tribune, and Ryan Poppy's in the studio for the Texas Public Radio's legislative reporter. Welcome, all of y'all. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
All right, so let's start off with the new news, which is the budget that Greg Abbott signed, and he did a little editing on it before he put down his signature. Ross Ramsey, what did we end up with?
We ended up with a $217 billion spending plan that was pretty much on track with what the legislature passed. Abbott's edits were relatively minor as things go. He shaved a couple of programs, but not by much, $120 million in total, which in the scheme of a $217 billion budget is almost a rounding error. It was much less dramatic than what he did 2 years ago.
And about a third of those bills were, a third of those vetoes were funds that had not been requested by the agency.
Right.
So it was no harm, no foul. I think the most interesting one, though, was that he cut the funding for the Legislative Budget Board, which is the accounting agency for the state, by about a third. The Legislative Budget Board had resisted his method of line item vetoes in the previous session, where he'd done something somewhat innovative by vetoing language as opposed to just appropriations.
Ryan Poppy, San Antonio, they took some of the air out of our air cleanup.
That's a good way of
effort.
It.
So what happened with that?
Yeah, I would say about 40% of that $120 million that Abbott vetoed out of the budget directly impacts the city of San Antonio. There's two programs. One is the air quality planning program that TCEQ gives money to cities for very initiatives to get cars off the road, bicycle use programs, carpooling, that sort of thing. So it took about $6 million out of that, vetoed that, as well as $43 million out of a program for low-income drivers that have a vehicle that can't pass an admissions test. That program would allow them to either purchase a new vehicle or repair their existing vehicle to bring those admission levels down in the areas where they're living. So those two probably counted for just a little bit, like I said, about 40% of what he ended up vetoing.
Is there a message in that where he vetoed the money for that, Harvey Kronberg?
Well, the message is that those are not Republican primary voters, so it generally doesn't even show on the Richter scale in terms of the people that he is reaching out to or cares about.
And Ross Ramsey, I was bracing for deeper cuts because I know he's got to find some money somewhere for those teacher raises that he wants in the special session.
I was too, actually. He proposed a $1,000 raise for Texas teachers. There are something in the order of 340,000 public school teachers in the state. So you're talking about a $600 or $700 million two-year expense. And the question was, where are you going to find the money for that? He hinted, but didn't say explicitly, he hinted that the school districts themselves should come up with the money somehow, and that the state would order a $1,000 pay raise. That would, immediately got people yelling unfunded mandate. But we'll see how it goes. I thought he might veto enough money to free up the funds needed for that.
Yeah, the it was quite surprising because he said they it would be up to the school districts essentially to restructure their priorities. Well, we haven't been particularly generous with public schools over the course of the last decade or so. Coming up with that money of that order of magnitude while also talking about capping property taxes, most of which fund schools, it almost becomes kabuki theater.
Now, looking back at the legislative session that just wrapped up, we'll get into what's happening with the special session. We're going to focus on that in the second half of the program. But we saw that some say this was not a high-performing legislature. We saw 1,211 bills become pass. We don't know if they're going to become law or not because Father's Day is when the cutoff date for vetoing. But still, that's a low-performing legislature, Ross Ramsey.
You know, they didn't come in with a big moonshot program. A lot of legislatures start with a big idea or a big problem to solve or some kind of overarching thing that you can see from the beginning of a session through the end of it, you know, whether that's school finance or tort reform or whatever the case might be. They came in with a lot of things that were, you know, headline gobbling things. You know, bathrooms would be a pretty good example of that. Maybe property taxes would come in behind that somewhere. But no big overarching grand program. They also had a tight budget, so they weren't in a mood to expand any programs in any particular way. Kind of started a little bit flat. They were relatively, you know, argumentative through the process. The House and the Senate are basically pretty representative of different ends of the Republican Party right now. And we got some version of Fight Club, basically, for 140 days.
But, Harvey, even though they passed fewer bills than normal, this is the fewest bills that they've passed since 1995, I understand. It's also they filed more bills than normal. They filed 6,631 bills, which is more than normal. So, was that just showboating?
Well, to a certain degree, yes, but I think that politics is largely personality and that, as Ross said, the House and the Senate come from two different ideological parts of the Republican Party, and in particular, the Speaker and the Lieutenant Governor are oil and water, and to say that their relationship is frequently toxic is an understatement. So the Lieutenant Governor early on seized the microphone, set the agenda, essentially the high-profile agenda, and it was without consultation with the Speaker, and a good portion of that agenda was in disagreement with the Speaker's point of view, and so things fairly quickly ground to a halt. One other thing I should mention, that is that other than emergency items, they're prohibited from taking up legislation for the first 60 days of the session. And so it doesn't really matter how many bills get filed. You've essentially got a choke point very quickly that happens very quickly and weeds out legislation.
Oil and water, two things that Texas is all about, and I can pick which one was oil and which one was water. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk specifically about some of the bills that generated most of the headlines, pro-gun legislation, what happened to marijuana legislation, and the Sanctuary Cities bill. More on that when we come back from the break. 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're looking at the 85th Texas Legislature. We're going to recap. We're also going to look at the special session preview. Those guys up in Austin, when they get together, start making laws, they're impacting your life. What did you see passed that you like, that you don't like? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We got a caller with David. And David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. what I'd like to ask about is property tax relief. The governor has been mentioning that he wants to do property tax relief in the special session, and we've seen our Bexar County appraisals rising like crazy, and supposedly they could limit it to 10% a year, but geez, at 10% a year, you'd be double value in 10 years and maybe priced out of your own home in taxes. I would like to see for property tax relief, the appraisals limited to anyone who owns an existing home to the federal inflation rate and maybe plus 1% or something like that, so we don't get priced out of our homes and then told that a new bond issue would not require a tax increase, had every one of them actually said an ad valorem tax to pay for it. And they're counting on property tax or property values to go up so that a tax increase can be had without calling it what it really is.
All right, David, thank you for the call, and I'm sure you're speaking for lots of people there, a lot of concerns about property taxes here in Texas. Ross Ramsey, executive editor, co-founder of the TexasTribune.org. This is something that people, it's a table issue, kitchen table issue.
Every single politician who goes home and does a town hall meeting hears about this, whether they have something to do with property taxes or not. You know, it's interesting, the state of Texas doesn't have a state property tax. It's unconstitutional. But people complain to them about it, and they want to be responsive. So they've proposed reforms that would work this way, that would limit local governments. I'm not talking about school districts, but limit local governments to a certain percentage increase without voter input. So I think the last version of this we saw in the regular session was the Senate would require automatic tax rollback elections on local property tax increases of more than 5%. As it stands in current law, if it goes up more than 8%, voters can petition. It's hard. It's burdensome. It's hard to get your voice in there. So they're trying to give voters some way to get a hold of the leash on local governments. Local governments have kicked back and said, you know, if we're growing quickly and need more money, then you're limiting our ability to build roads and water supplies and all of that kind of stuff. And that's where the fight sits. What the state can't do is tell the cities and counties and other entities what local property taxes should be. And it's really hard to limit taxes that way. The other component of this is 53% of your local tax bill is public school taxes. And public school taxes are part of a complicated mechanism that, you know, roughly works like a waterbed. When the state pays less, the locals pay more. And the state is paying, I think it's about $340 less per student than it was 10 years ago, and your local taxes have gone up.
One more piece of the puzzle here that makes it even more complicated. The bill did pass out of the Senate and was sent to the House, but one of the Gulf Coast senators, Larry Taylor, pointed out that they're subject to hurricanes, for instance, and that the entire island of Galveston could be wiped out, that the value of property in that kind of circumstance would plummet, and then as they rebuild, the value of property would be reasserted, and it would increase by definition greater than 5%, and that there was no remedy in the legislation for resolving that out in West Texas, where you've got highly fluctuating mineral values. Property taxes go up and down based, or property valuations go up and down based on what those mineral valuations are. And while it sounds good on paper to say anything above 5% should mandate a validation election, there are too many unknowns that were unresolved in any of the legislation to frankly be practical.
How many times have we been to a legislature and we've heard the talk about property tax reform and they pass something and it's signed into law and we hear all these great flowery speeches about how they accomplished this, and then we get our appraisals and our tax bills and we don't see it. But if I owned a refinery or a strip mall, would I have seen it then? Ross Ramsey.
You might have seen it if it was a bigger number, but you know, the 2006 reforms were supposed to give us $2,000 on average each, according to Rick Perry's advertising at the time, and I don't think most Texans saw $2,000 drops in their property tax bills. Two years ago, we got a tax break, quote unquote, that was supposed to give each of us an average of $126 or $128. I think a lot of people might not have seen that. You know, the best the legislature can do, since it does not itself levy a property tax, is try to push local governments that do charge property taxes into, you know, doing certain things. They haven't been very successful at it.
And the flip side is that the one thing the legislature really does as well is cost shift and push mandates down onto local governments that are increasingly expensive. So public safety mandates and public education mandates all generate additional cost. but the legislature has been loath to fund the cost of the things that they've pushed downhill.
Sanctuary cities did pass, became law. We've got San Antonio and other cities fighting that. But Ryan Poppe, Texas Public Radio legislative correspondent, what was the takeaway? How did that go down in the legislature?
Well, it seems like the bill started out a much stronger bill in the Senate. The House had its version, but unfortunately, during that debate, or fortunately, however you view the bill, things were added to it, talking about the what Democrats have said, show your papers, please, bill, that provision that police officers could inquire about someone's immigration status during something as simple as a routine traffic stop. And so once that bill made it out of the House, there was a lot of steam behind it and ended up on the governor's desk, and he signed it into law. So now we have this bill. It's been signed into law, goes into effect September 1, but, you know, the debate of the bill and its impact, certainly we talked about oil and water, some of that oil and water very present on the House floor on the last day of the session, leading to a little bit of a scuffle, maybe a stretch calling it a scuffle, shoving match between state lawmakers, very passionate about the idea of some against others for this idea of sanctuary cities.
And it was somewhere between a Donnybrook, a scuffle, And I don't know some other words that you see he's talking about that. People are always going into legislative sessions hoping that this will be the year that the lawmakers will do something about marijuana. We saw some bills for the first time get out of committee, but then it never got any further than that. So Ryan Poppe, what's happening there?
Just no flavor for that particular legislation this session. You know, you see what's happening in 2015, we had the Compassionate Use Act. That's the limited medical marijuana, if you want to even call it that.
Well, it's like oil.
Oil.
It's not going to get you high.
CBD oil. It's not going to get you high. There's no very limited THC.
It's no fun marijuana.
So what lawmakers are doing is seeing how that shakes out first, because it's been 2 years to implement it. We finally have some dispensaries that can sell it. But I think that lawmakers are a little apprehensive. They want to see how that's going to work. Now we have DPS security that's going to have to be on site for those facilities. So they're just kind of seeing how that is going to happen in Texas before we lead into decriminalization and medical marijuana. But it just didn't seem like it was a crowded playing field with all the other issues this session.
Marijuana bill, see how it shakes out. I see what you did there, Brian Poppe. all right, so let's talk about guns. There isn't a legislative session where there isn't some sort of gun activity going on. Ross Ramsey, we saw 7 pro-gun bills get passed, and Governor Abbott promptly signed 2 of them into law. So, yes, guns and Texas legislature.
They didn't do the big one. The big one that they're talking about now that a lot of the Second Amendment advocates are talking about is constitutional carry. It's the idea that there shouldn't be any law restricting your use of guns, that your gun license is the Constitution, and that they ought to get rid of the concealed carry laws and the open carry laws. It didn't go anywhere this time. And, you know, there seems to be sort of a general legislature on pause with this issue. They did campus carry most recently was the big piece of legislation. And I think they want to see how it shakes out. And I think a lot of law enforcement people are saying, let's just hold right here for a little bit and see how this goes.
And actually, it's worth noting perhaps the biggest stakeholders in this issue are obviously law enforcement. And the metaphor for law enforcement's futility in being able to slow these things down was last session. They knew that we were going to pass open carry. There was no way to stop it. They requested that at a bare minimum that there'd be a requirement for double lock holsters. That amendment was rejected on the Senate floor, so there is, even at this point, no requirement for somebody open carrying to have a double lock holster, which means somebody can slip up behind you and simply take your pistol out of your holster.
But they did lower the license to be a concealed handgun individual. They lowered the price for that license. In a session where we kept hearing about how there was no money for bills like testing rape kits, they were able to basically give away this license to a much, much lower barrier of cost. So, Ross Ramsey, what's up with that?
Well, it didn't cost much, and it was a sop to the Second Amendment advocates that the Republicans count as part of their base constituency. So I think politically it was a fairly easy vote.
I think that we should have started this with a predicate that in a state of 26 million people, 1.3 million people typically vote in a Republican primary. So another way of saying that is about 700,000 people are what you need to validate legislation, and that's the audience, the constituency you're most concerned about.
But what about the Latino vote in Texas? Things like the Sanctuary Cities Bill, is that going to finally activate that voter base, Harvey Kronberg?
That remains to be seen, because even with the backdrop of all of the rhetoric coming out of the Republican nominee in the last election, Donald Trump, we didn't see any real spike in Latino voting. Now, in this situation, we're talking about dividing up families potentially, and we've already seen the number of emergency calls in places like Houston, where there might be sexual assaults or physical assaults, drop precipitously because they're afraid of any kind of interaction with law enforcement. So that may galvanize it, but waiting for the surge in Latino vote has not been a rewarding wait.
And David's Law, a bill that we paid close attention to here, passed. Ryan Poppy?
Yep, that there will be a law that allows schools to start tracking incidents of cyberbullying, and as well as punishing the cyberbullies when that cyberbullying, online cyberbullying, has led to some sort of physical assault or physical violence.
Ross Ramsey, texting while driving. It took a horrible bus crash in Uvalde. Was that the thing that finally put this over the finish line?
So, you know, this has been around for 10 years. Former Speaker Tom Craddock and Senator Judith Zaffarini have been pushing this for a long time. Each of them is a powerhouse within their own chamber, and they haven't been able to get this through. They got it all the way to Rick Perry's desk. He vetoed it as micromanaging adult behavior. Greg Abbott shared a little bit of that sentiment, but went ahead and signed it. He did have one complaint about it, in that he said it didn't do enough to preempt existing local regulations of texting while driving. And, you know, he said he'd like to see that, but he went ahead and signed it. I think the bus crash outside of Uvalde was probably the proximate cause of this thing passing this time. It was just too hard to vote against.
The enormity of the tragedy was pretty overpowering, and right. I think it impacted everybody.
Okay, so we have the Father's Day cutoff. It just happens to be Father's Day when the veto deadline comes in. Ross Ramsey, are we bracing for a flurry of vetoes? Could they be overridden in a special session?
The second question's easy. The answer is no. You can only override. Pardon me. You can only override a veto in the session in which the bill was passed. So the great advantage to a governor who's doing these vetoes after the end of a session is that, you know, he's free from legislative interference and legislative pushback. The first question is, you know, I don't know what he's going to do. There, you can find a rumor either way that he's going to veto a lot of bills, that he's not going to veto a lot of bills. We'll know when the deadline hits.
Do you think he'll be motivated trying to reassert himself into the legislature, because he was kind of governor absent, he was called at the time? Ross, real quick.
You know, I think that he's reasserting himself two ways. One of them is with that long agenda for the special session, the 20-issue agenda, and he's sort of taking ownership of some issues that he would not take ownership of during the regular session. Right. And, you know, to some extent, you know, what he vetoes here in the next few days is going to tell part of that story.
Okay, but we're going to come back after this break. We're going to be talking about the special session of 20 items on the call. 614-8980, this is The Source. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're going to focus now on the special session that will be in July, 30 days, that the legislature has to pass 20 bills that they couldn't get done in the 140 days in the regular session. And that would be tough even under the best circumstances, but we've got lawmakers that really aren't seeing eye to eye these days. What do you think about the special session? 614-8980, 614-8980. We've got Ross Ramsey with us. He is executive editor, co-founder of the Texas Tribune, and also Harvey Kronberg, founder of the Quorum Report. And we're joined now by Dr. Jim Humphreys. He's the chair chair of the Texas Medical Association's Council on Legislation. And Dr. Humphreys, welcome to The Source. So when you heard that, when you first saw that the legislature, first legislature, the regular, unspecial one, did not pass the sunset legislation for the Texas Medical Board, were you kind of nervous?
Well, it was an issue of concern because without the Texas Medical Board having passed the sunset review, which comes up periodically, as do all state agencies, it loses its mandate. And we need it both to provide oversight and licensure items for physicians as well as patient protections. That's their main avenue of addressing concerns when they have issues that come up with medical care.
So in the special session, that was the first thing that Governor Greg Abbott said, this is a must-get-done kind of a thing. So Harvey Kronberg, if this is a must-get-done kind of a thing, why didn't they take care of it during the regular session?
Well, let's be clear. This was an engineered meltdown. It was intended to melt down 6 months before the legislature ever convened. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was saying if certain parts of his agenda did not pass, that he was going to push us into a special session. At that time, he was talking about busting the budget, but that, I think, was too high profile. This is far more arcane. The House is probably faulted to a certain degree because they put the Sunset Safety Net bill too far back on the calendar so that it did become subject. But as the Dallas Morning News reported, there was collusion between the so-called Freedom Caucus and the Lieutenant Governor to run the clock out on this bill.
So that was when they were on the Mother's Day massacre of the bills on the floor. Is that what you're referring to, Harvey?
No, it was actually the, I guess it was Mother's Day now that I think right. about it. how we do lose track of our mothers at that point. But yes. They were talking bills to death with the deliberate intent of running the clock out. This was, for some reason, this bill was placed late on the calendar for that day as opposed to early on the calendar. And although it was an easy fix, if the two chambers were had intended to resolve it, at least one chamber wanted to promote the special, or at least one presiding officer wanted to promote a special session to keep bathrooms and other hot button issues on the front page.
Yeah, all the details aside, it died in the Senate.
Right. But so Ross Ramsey, so what do you think? I mean, is this just a checkbox? This is get this done, sunset legislation, Texas Medical Board, we can do it in one day and we can move on to the 19 other items. Are they going to be able to, some people, maybe like San Antonio Senator Jose Menendez, who did a filibuster to kill the annexation law, will they try to slow walk this through?
Well, there's two ways to do the sunset thing. One of them is to pass what they call a safety net bill, which basically says all of the agencies that would expire if we didn't do anything get extended for another 2 years. You just change the expiration date on the milk carton. And the other way to do that is to say, well, let's go ahead and take care of the sunset legislation for each of these agencies, which could be a longer drawn-out process. So part of it depends on, what you want the end goal to be. Do you want to just fix these agencies for another 12 years, or do you just want to kick it down the road for 2 years? The latter choice is faster and is something you could do in, half an hour or so and free up all your time for the other 19 issues. I think that's probably how the Senate would lean. I think the House might want to slow play this. In any case, with an agenda this long, each House, if it wants to, has plenty of opportunities to mess with things and slow things down.
What's interesting here was that the governor said this was going to be the first item on the call, and once we got this resolved, the safety net bill or dealing with sunset, we would take up the other 19
issues.
Once
we get it resolved in the Senate.
Ah, point taken
right.
and sustained.
Right.
But if he really did want to drive the legislature into considering all 19 items, he would have made it the last item on the call, not the first item on, and exclusively the first item on the call.
All right. So, but Dr. Jim Humphreys, is that something that you would want to see done, just changing the expiration date on the carton of milk for this item, as Ross Ramsey put that? Because, the milk still goes sour whether or not you change the date or not. Are there certain changes, adaptations, updates, refinements that need to be done to the way that the Texas Medical Board is operating today that you want seen put into law?
Well, there are always opportunities for improvement with those sorts of things. And we would, you know, from the Texas Medical Association standpoint, like to see a few tweaks come into play. However, as a general rule, actually, for the most part, the agency functions pretty well as it currently is. We'd like to see some more fair process protections put in if the actual sunset process goes through. However, at this point, we're most concerned that it gets covered at all. So really, the two-year safety net bill would be just fine if they got it done and out of the way.
Now, on the call, there is the Extending Maternal Mortality Task Force. This is something looking at a issue that's, I think, of alarming and of interest to many, many people in the state, trying to figure out why so many mothers are dying after giving birth here in the state. So Dr. Humphreys, as part of the the Texas Medical Association Council on Legislation, do you pay close attention to bills like this and you want to see these passed?
No, we absolutely do. The maternal mortality rate, as you mentioned, is appalling in Texas. It's completely appalling. It's a terribly complicated problem. I know you guys have had a show on it not terribly long ago that covered it quite well. The task force that was in effect that's trying to put some arms around the problem was making some progress, although it's still going to take a while. And so really extending this is going to be quite important, because the state needs to figure out what it can do to try to mitigate this. And a lot of it's a complicated issue with patient education and lifestyle choices by the mother.
And lack of overall health care and access to insurance.
Exactly. And, that does play in somewhat to the Medicaid funding, which is can be certainly part of the problem, but at a minimum, we need to extend the task force and give it a chance to get its work done.
What did the legislature do about Medicaid funding in the last session, Dr. Humphreys?
Well, they
came up short.
It always comes up short. It always comes up short. So what they typically do is they will the funding, if I remember correctly, for this next 2 years is basically pretty similar to the funding they established for the last biennium. And in the usual fashion for the state legislature, they almost always do this, they don't factor in cost growth and not much in the way of actual case growth, despite the fact that the population is going up in the state. So typically what they'll do is they'll establish funding, and then they find out they're short at the end of the biennium, and at the start of the next session, they pass a supplemental appropriations bill to cover the hole from the last time. So the last biennium had a $787 million hole that they had to fill in with the special appropriation at the start of this session. And they'll have to do the same thing next time.
And Ross Ramsey, why do they do that?
Because it makes the budget balance. The way it's a way to do a deferral. You're writing a budget for 24 months. You essentially put enough money in the budget to cover, 22 or 23 of those months, knowing that you can come back later and Jim said, top it off. They've gotten into the habit of it. And once you do that, once you're into the habit of that, you either have to start and make up all of the money in one budget year, or just kind of keep your program rolling. They've decided to keep their program rolling. And one of the things that they say as they do this, it's never worked out quite this way, but one of the things that they say is, we're going to give Medicaid a little bit less money than they say they need, in hopes that they will find savings and that this will be enough. They never do quite find that savings.
the fiscal year ends in August, and the legislature convenes the previous January, so they have plenty of time to deal with the shortfall.
All right, so but they are going to put what they call, bathroom privacy on this call. This is something that they didn't pass in the session, and this is something that has been a wedge issue. And Harvey Kronberg, is this going to be the monkey wrench in the fine-tuned machine of the Texas legislature?
Well, the speaker has come out against it. The lieutenant governor has made it his premier issue. And when I said that 6 months before the session began, he was already rattling cages on this. But the truth is that the business community opposes it. There really hasn't been an identifiable problem per se. And if, in fact, it is put on the call after the one bill we have to pass, I see it drifting off, although I think there's some House Republicans that would like to vote on it. Even the senators that supported it held their nose to support it because, to a large degree, they think it's a manufactured issue.
And Ross Ramsey, what do you think?
You know, I think Harvey's right. I think a lot of House members want to vote on it. Or another way to put it would be if you poll them privately and say, how do you think you should vote on this? You get one answer. If you say, how would you vote if you were on the floor in front of the cameras and everything else? You get another answer. It would pass if it goes on the floor. And Dan Patrick's strategy for several months has been to get it to the floor. But I might argue a little bit with your characterization of the well-oiled machine that is the Texas legislature. It's a little bit squeaky, and it's easy to get in the way of that kind of stuff. You know, a number of House members, and I think the Speaker, you know, is probably in this number, think that this would lead to more problems, that you would actually antagonize some of the transgender Texans who are basically flying under the radar now, and that you're creating a problem where none exists rather than just coming in with a solution to a problem you don't have.
One more break. We'll be right back in 1 minute. Our phone lines are open. You've got a question or a comment about the Texas legislature and the special session. 614-8980, 614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the 85th Texas Legislature. We've got a recap on that and also the special session preview. Coming up in July, the lawmakers go back to Austin to tackle sunset legislation that it was supposed to do in the first session. And then there are 19 other items that they can deal with. What do you think? What are your issues that you want to see added to the call, or what do you want to see passed or blocked? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Ross Ramsey, we talked about this earlier, teacher pay raise increase of $1,000, yet that's something that Greg Abbott wants, but he doesn't want to pay for it.
Yeah, I think it's probably DOA. It's so expensive, and the legislature doesn't have any money. They found out the day before the regular session from the controller that they would be in relatively dire straits. It wasn't a terrible budget, but it wasn't a great budget. They had less money available than they did 2 years earlier. The $1,000 per teacher pay raise, you've got roughly 340,000 teachers. You're talking $600 to $700 million over 2 years, and they just don't have the money.
The canary in the coal mine was on the last sales tax report, for instance. We showed 3% growth year over year in sales tax received. The national inflation rate's about 2.2%. So that reflects a growth in consumption over inflation of about 0.7%.
Another item is administrative flexibility in teacher hiring and retention practices. We've already got more than half of the teachers on the job in Texas who went through alternative certification process in order to get into the classroom. But this opened the door for more alternative certification, which some of these outfits are kind of squirrely, Ross Ramsey?
That's the argument, was that it would open up the labor pool a little bit. The teacher associations and unions hate this thing, and they think it lets unqualified people into teaching kids and, you know, drags down education. That's their argument. It obviously would dilute their power in the labor pool. That's the argument of the other side. I think it's a hard sell in the legislature right now. But I do think it's an idea that if it doesn't go in a special session here, we're going to see it again in 2019.
Now, property tax reform, are they going to have to do new hearings and everything else, or can they just pick up where they left off in the last legislative session? Harvey Kronberg, what kind of property tax reform?
They've had pretty much the arguments, so I suspect that there will be pro forma hearings. I don't expect that we're going to see hundreds of citizens descend on any kind of hearings. But when you're talking about 19 items in 30 days, the ability to run long-term hearings is fairly limited. I think that they'll essentially be pro forma. They'll hear from a few stakeholders. And if the bill makes it to both floors, which is not a given necessarily, I think the outcome remains uncertain.
Some people have characterized this list on the call from Governor Greg Abbott as anti-municipal government. And Ross Ramsey, why do they say that?
You know, there are a bunch of things in here that would limit the powers of municipal governments that would put the state in places where the state hasn't asserted itself. You know, we were talking about texting while driving a minute ago. A lot of cities around the state have regulated that, and the state decided to step in part in the language that they use to get rid of a patchwork of regulations as you cross a city line, drive from this city to that one. And things like that happen, you know, with other ordinances as well. Greg Abbott and others in management in the state right now would like to see the state assert itself and have more control over these things, which inevitably means taking control away from the cities and the counties and the local authorities who do it now. It's an argument with a longstanding Republican premise of the government closest to the people, but the folks in state government argue that, you know, the state ought to be the locus of government, both from the federal level and from the local level.
Harvey, how does that play out with voters?
Well, it depends on the issue, frankly. So, for instance, fracking in Denton did not play well with the voters, where a local ordinance or local referendum was overruled. Uber, on the other hand, and ride sharing probably does have a broader support. But what's ironic about this is that Governor Abbott and other Republicans applaud patchwork regulation as long as 50 states have 50 different sets of regulations on virtually everything. So they applaud it uphill while trying to deconstruct it downhill.
So one of the items is preventing cities from regulating what property owners can do with trees on their private land. In San Antonio, we have a tree ordinance that we're trying to protect our canopy as developers move in. We don't want to see them scraping the land and starting all over again and just having that bare limestone surface, not even real dirt anymore. So people see this as something that San Antonio doesn't like. Ross Ramsey, but Governor Greg Abbott thinks this is what needs to happen.
Well, and your state senator, Donna Campbell, as well, who carried the legislation. You know, the issue here is partly, you know, protect the canopy, protect the environment. And on the other hand, it's my tree. It's in my yard. I ought to be able to chop it down if I want to. And you get those countervailing forces every time you bring this argument up. In fact, the governor himself is at odds with the city of Austin over a pecan tree that he took out of his lawn to put in a swimming pool. And, you know, regarded it as his tree. Austin has an ordinance that says if a tree is more than 2 feet in diameter that you've got to either plant things in its place or leave it alone. These are the kinds of ordinances that the state is talking about jumping in on. But, you know, the other side of the argument is it the same argument if I'm talking about a tree in my lawn or if I'm a developer with 4,000 trees on 4,000 acres?
And frankly, this is not the only pro-developer initiative or item that the governor has put on the call. He also added, you can't change the rules in the middle of the game, which makes a certain amount of sense, obviously, and that municipalities cannot, or regulating authorities cannot drag their feet in the permitting process, both of which are pro-developer.
Right, but preventing local governments from changing rules midway through construction projects, yeah, you could see how that would make sense on its surface. But when you say, well, when does the construction process actually begin if some people are just filing paperwork and they haven't even really begun a construction project yet, if they haven't shoveled the ground yet, then maybe is that the issue, Harvey, as you brought that up?
Well, actually, we're about to find out because, as you know, Austin is considering adopting a new massive land code ordinance called Code Next. Projects are in the planning stages at this stage, yet we don't even know what the rules are going to be under this new land management type of thing. And so I'm not sure how this litigates itself in the legislature. Developers have never been underrepresented when it comes to legislative politics.
It's like this is why God invented lawyers, I think.
Was it God that did that?
That's right, yeah. Ultimately, yes.
Okay. So Dr. Jim Humphreys, chair of the Texas Medical Association Council on Legislation, we need more doctors in Texas. We need more general practitioners. We need more mental health practitioners as well. Is the legislature going to do anything to try and facilitate that?
Well, that's been a longstanding problem, and the legislature in the last few sessions has actually taken some steps to address that. As probably many people know, we have several new medical schools, one here in town, one that's opened in Austin or is opening in Austin, and one down in the Rio Grande Valley. That's fine. The other part of that equation is that what we also need in conjunction with new medical students is a slot for them to do their residency training where they basically finish up after school and actually learn their clinical practice.
That's the choke point right there.
It is, and the reality is that residents tend to stay wherever they go to do their residency, regardless of where they went to medical school. So the idea is that we need to provide enough residency slots to keep these people in the state instead of just having them go to medical school here and then go off to another state to do residency and stay there. And the legislature has been somewhat generous considering how relatively poor the budget was this last session in maintaining funding for some GME slots. We're always pushing for more, but they are taking some steps in the right direction.
We can't have a session, special or otherwise, without something on the docket about abortion. So Governor Greg Abbott put anti-abortion legislation on the docket, including resurrecting this bill from Senator Larry Taylor, which would require women to pay a separate premium if they want their health plan to cover elective abortion. So does that look like that's going to be a slam dunk in this special session, Ross Ramsey?
I don't think it's going to be a slam dunk, and if it was going to be a slam dunk, it wouldn't be in the special session. I mean, you know, you're looking at 20 issues in 30 days that the legislature could not pass in 140 days, and this was one of the things that didn't pass. It's got significant opposition. I think, you know, depending on how you present it and where you present it, you know, it potentially has a majority in both houses, but I think it's going to be a trick to get this through. There are a lot of high-profile, controversial bills to deal with, and relatively speaking, this is not a priority. It's a priority for some, but it doesn't match some of the other issues on the table.
I would add one more thing, and that is that amortizing insurance is about amortizing risk about overbroad populations. And when you start doing cafeteria items like that, which does have a constituency, you're raising the cost per individual. Now, that obviously is part of the intention, but it's counterintuitive to what insurance is about.
And Harvey Kronberg, very quickly, what about the relationship between Dan Patrick and Speaker Joe Strauss? Is that going to will we see them become besties at the end of this special session?
They haven't been besties since the Speaker became the Speaker in 2009. The Lieutenant Governor's closest fundraising affiliates and associates have been trying to undermine Strauss since the very beginning, and the relationship is toxic.
All right. July 18th is when the lawmakers go back to Austin. They've got 30 days, basically 4 weeks, to try to figure out these 20 items that they couldn't get done in the 140 days that they had in their regular session. We'll see what we end up with. I want to thank all of our guests. We've got Harvey Kronberg. He's the founder of the Quorum Report. Ross Ramsey, he is the executive editor and co-founder of the Texas Tribune. Earlier, we had Ryan Poppy, Texas Public Radio legislative correspondent, and with us right now is Dr. Jim Humphreys, Chair of the Texas Medical Association Council on Legislation. This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.